Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benton.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
And we've got a topic today that is kind of a long time in the making because there's been a lot of correspondence back and forth between myself and one of our listeners, right?
Yeah. Richard Rosso, who is a longtime buddy of ours and the show, he writes in and gives us some cool recommendations. And you guys have actually had a long conversation or correspondence, rather, about this topic.
Yeah, once or twice we have. And, we've written back and forth about limousines because, Richard, apparently, I'm going to recall an episode from a long time ago, Ben.
All right.
And this will kind of set the stage is that I think we talked about Richard maybe during a Nuts and Bolts episode or possibly maybe it was listener mail section.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly when it was. But Richard mentioned that he had driven a 1936 Rolls-Royce limousine to the senior prom. Or was it just a Rolls-Royce, I think? It was just a Rolls-Royce, maybe not a limo.
It was. I don't think it was a limo. I think it was a Rolls-Royce. But 1930s Rolls-Royce is probably about as long as a modern limousine.
It probably was. That's right. That's why I got the two confused, because Richard also is a limo driver, as we'll find out, a chauffeur.
Right.
But kind of a funny story about the 36 Rolls-Royce is that, you know, he was on the wrong side of the car. He was driving on the right-hand side on roads that, you know, are made for, you know, cars that are left-hand drive. And he was having a hard time judging corners and things like that. It was a pretty funny story. But anyways, I think a lot of our listeners will remember that story. Also, you know, I was interested because a few times Richard has mentioned that he is a limo driver, a chauffeur, and mentions a couple of cars that he has driven in the past. And there's a whole laundry list of vehicles here that he sent along, you know, that we've found out since.
Right.
He sent along a really cool photo of this this Model A that we're going to talk about in just a minute, an 8-passenger Model A limo from 1930. Now, he drove that 1936 that we talked about. That wasn't a limo, I don't believe. He's also driven an 8-passenger town car limo, an 8-passenger bus limousine,
right,
a 16-passenger Hummer limousine, which is what a monster that is, right? And an 18-passenger bus limousine,
right,
and a 22-passenger bus limousine with the stripper pole.
Right, which is, well, hey, Scott, they're called dancers.
It's a dancer pole.
Which, but that's the largest one he's driven, right?
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, he's got a lot of experience in this thing. And, you know, who else to go to than Richard for some good advice on, you know, what limos are all about? Because I had a few questions, a couple of burning questions that I had to have answered, I guess, from Richard along the way.
Right.
And really it boils down to two things. I just wanted to know, was any one particular limo more difficult to drive when compared to the others? And if so, you know, why was that the case? I just wanted to know, are they about the same as far as visibility and stopping distances and performance? If performance is any kind of a concern, really.
Right.
Also, I wanted to know, what about the driver? Like, you know, what kind of features and comforts are up front that the people that are in the back of the limousine don't really know about? Is there anything additional that a limousine provides for the driver that is not given to the passengers?
Yeah.
And my guess was that it's about the same as the standard car that it's derived from. Like, let's say it's a Cadillac limousine. It probably has all the standard features that a Cadillac has up front. I don't think they add anything additional because it's a limousine up front, other than switches and controls for the extra windows and extra doors, things like that.
Yeah. And, you guys continue some of the conversation here with, one thing that's great about that 8-passenger Model A is that it was lowered.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Yeah. So it had a true street rod look to it. I mean, it's a bright red car. Of course, we mentioned, what year was it? 1930 Model A?
I believe so.
It looks like a hot rod. It's not like, you know, the old timey looking type car. It's definitely a hot rod vehicle. Custom wheels, custom paint, all that, you know, the tinted windows, everything. I think he said that, you know, people love to stop him in this car, right?
Right. Yeah. And he also, what's interesting is going back to the idea of performance, which I think we'll explore a little bit here. One thing he said, I love that he told his boss that it'd be okay if he never had to drive the stretch Hummer again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one that he definitely didn't like driving because, I think it was just so enormous.
It's just a pain to turn.
Even a standard Hummer, I think, would be difficult to drive, but
right.
a stretch Hummer, that's a different case. But Richard wrote back with a very nice response, you know, very long response, and I appreciate it, and I've told him so, you know, personally as well, but I wanted to mention it again on air. And I'll quickly go through some of the things that he mentioned here before we get into kind of what limos are all about, Ben. Because I want to talk about today. I want to talk about who owns limousines, how big is the industry, why the reasons that you may want to rent a limousine, the purposes behind that.
Okay.
I want to talk about the proliferation, I guess, of limousines in the recent past. How they're more prevalent now than they were ever in our history, really.
Yep.
Just a lot of different things. Maybe a little history, some licensing, things like that. So, let's get into Richard's responses. And first thing he points out is, I haven't really thought about this in a long time, is what he says. And I don't know if Richard is retired or if he's still doing it. I didn't really quite get the clear message on that. But he says that he was thinking about. Or maybe he hasn't thought about it because it's kind of a daily thing for him. It's just really something that you take for granted at some point. But he says, first of all, he wants to make sure that everybody knows that each one is custom made. They take out the big saw, as he says it. They cut it in the middle and then just put in they build the center section really around that. So they stretch the wheelbase and add all the creature comforts inside after they're done stretching the thing.
Right. Yeah. They gut the inside of the car and then reassemble it because usually it's a bottom-up reassembly on the interior because you want to add all of those, as he calls them, creature comforts, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Leather seats, the different...
they've got a wet bar in them sometimes.
Right, yeah.
They've got custom lighting.
Sure.
All the extra
little,
doors.
A little jacuzzi,
you
maybe.
Yeah, jacuzzi and the stretch limousines, the helipad, as we'll find out later.
Right.
Just all kinds of crazy things that they can put inside these things.
This has some drawbacks for the driver's compartment, because that's what we were asking about, right?
Yeah, the driver's compartment, I don't know about drawbacks necessarily, but it does have, what do you mean drawbacks, then?
He said, if I recall correctly, After the stretching, the customization, it left the driver's compartment a little bit small.
Oh, you know what? I think you're right because it would feel like you're in a tight, tight cabin. I don't know. You've been in a truck, I guess, maybe where the rear window is right behind your head. It's a super tight cabin. You feel a little bit, boxed in, I guess, at that point.
Right.
When you have a window or glass or something there, you can't recline the seat back as far as you want to. I can understand that. I'd forgotten about that part of the note. I appreciate.
Well, I think it's a smaller thing, but of course, the other big thing that is blindingly obvious is that visibility is limited. I'm sure I personally would not want to drive a limousine. Fun to ride in, hate to drive one.
Have you ever driven a big truck?
Yeah.
And you had a hard time. Have you ever had to back up a big truck?
Yeah. I didn't have a hard time necessarily, but I took it slow. I was careful because
it's tough.
Yeah, there are big blind spots,
Yeah, there sure are. And I mean, backing up is really, really difficult. I hope, in many cases, a lot of limo drivers try not to back up. I know they try to, strategically drive into places where they can head out straight out parking, whether it's parking, whether it's picking somebody up, dropping somebody off, whatever.
It's a lot of strategy.
Yeah, there would be, I think. And I think it'd be difficult to back up. Of course, you're using all mirrors. I'm sure that some of the newer ones have cameras for your rear view, of course.
Right.
But, which makes things a lot easier than just two side mirrors. And, there's no way you're seeing out the back window.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Truck drivers and limo drivers, hats off to you guys and gals, because when I see a tractor trailer driver backing up to park, at a Flying J or something, I always get just a little bit white knuckled when I watch him swing the cab around. Mm-hmm. And, with limo drivers, I think there's, the same thing. You have to have a really good spatial aptitude and you have to have a very good sense of strategy on the road.
There's a definite skill. That goes into play there. That's for sure.
And I'm sorry, I interrupted though.
Oh no, not at all. I mean, I'm just kind of going down the list of things that we talked about here. And he tried his best to answer, and he did answer everything that I asked. So, he mentions, and I'm just hitting the highlights here. Really, we're not going to get into the full emails because they're very long, very good, well written.
Yeah.
Wanted to say that the Model A. He mentioned the Model A. In specific, because he said it was just a little bit too low. It was starting to get hung up on some of the curbs and, the parking lots and, the speed bumps that are in parking lots, rather. And I was having a hard time finding some areas to get out of, like maybe the correct entrance or exits for parking lots, things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The steep inclines that you go in and out of. Because maybe just a little bit too low, but the thing about it was probably the coolest thing that he had driven because everywhere he drove, he said it was like his own car show. And I think you mentioned that people kind of naturally were attracted to this vehicle.
Said, I called it my chick magnet.
Yeah, that's right. And he says, he mentions driving around, San Luis Obispo area of California, and, said that, you know, a lot of people were just somehow drawn to it, almost like a magnet, like you said, a magnet, but people, yeah. People just really love that one. And it is really cool. He sent us a nice big photograph of that one. Maybe we'll share that with our listeners. Also wanted to say something about, tail swing. You know, we talked about buses. We talked about school buses and the tail swing and those things. And it's not, I don't know how to say this. I don't know if it's as dramatic in a limousine as it would be on a bus. But due to the shortened wheelbase, you know, the wheels are relatively tight together in a school bus. There's a lot of tail swing in that.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't think of it so much in a limousine. But I guess there is quite a bit of tail swing that you have to worry about in some of these things. So you have to worry about not hitting anything with the tail end as you come around a corner as well. So not only, you know, chopping the corners, you have to worry about, you know, taking them wide.
Yeah.
You have to worry about what the back end of the car is doing behind the rear wheels.
Yeah.
That's something that most people, you know, most cars don't really have to deal with.
Right. And there's another thing that he mentions that I thought was important, adding on to the idea that driving a limo is not like driving a typical sedan or something. This is something that I didn't know, Scott. He said that the limo manufacturers often don't beef up the brakes.
Yeah.
When they stretch out the limo.
Which is ridiculous. I mean, you've got an extra large vehicle with extra weight. You're carrying a lot of 20 people. Yeah. A lot of people. Like many, many people. I mean, even if it's an extra five people or whatever it is, you know, the ability to stop is really, really important. It's critical. And I'm surprised they don't really, you know, upgrade those brakes when they do, but apparently they don't. They just leave the standard brakes, which I found that truly remarkable. Now, yeah. I can understand maybe the engine, because usually in these big luxury vehicles, there's usually a pretty strong engine.
Right.
Usually like a big V8 engine, something like that. It's typically enough to already cover that, you know, compensate for it. But, I don't know. And you're not really looking for performance in a limousine.
You're probably not going to drag race at a red light in a limousine.
Unless that's what it's built for. Unless it's a drag racing limo as kind of a novelty item, you know.
The old drag race limo.
You know what? I want to go back and just quickly, I want to clear something up. He mentions that, you know, when you drive a bus, there's tail swing. He said in a stretch limo, there is no tail swing. However, you do have to be careful when you pull out, because when you start your corner, the cities with narrow roads, and I kind of mixed that up. He said that the bus limousines, you do have that. The stretch limousines, you don't have that.
I see.
And so the bus limousines are a different case. But he wanted to say that, you know, some of the narrow roads in some of the smaller cities are difficult to deal with because of that tight turning rate, the wide turning radius that you have to have, and you don't have that allowance in some of the smaller cities.
So, listeners, at this point, you probably are getting the feeling. Your spider sense is probably going off, and you're saying, hey, Scott and Richard have been talking for a while, and it is true. What else do we have?
Well, you know what? I'll keep it relatively brief. We'll chop this off, and then we'll go to the rest of the
chop
stuff.
Chop it off and stretch
it
out.
Yeah, how about this? I mean, we talked about, you know, some of the largest stuff he's driven, the 22-passenger bus, and you mentioned the most difficult to drive, which was the stretch Hummer, and the one that he didn't want to drive ever again, really.
Right.
Or he said he would be happy if he didn't. I don't know if he really has or not.
Which I thought was diplomatic language.
That's a diplomatic way to say it. You're right. But also, you know, he said something about the bus was maybe difficult to drive as well, because people inside the bus were dancing while he was driving. Now, that's trouble, because you've got a moving cargo inside of a moving vehicle.
Right, and you have to stop. And he said already stops might be difficult, because really, Scott, the brakes were the most surprising thing to me.
I think so, too. That was probably the most eye-opening thing, was that the brakes weren't upgraded. So, you know, keep that in mind when you see a limo on the road, too, that, you know, they may have reduced braking capability because of the extra weight and size of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about licensing just briefly. There's a couple things I want to talk about this. It's a little different in the U.S. and in Europe. And I've got, you know, the differences between the two here. And Richard was able to help us out with some of the U.S. licensing. And he says it requires at least in California, where he is, it requires a CDL and a passenger endorsement license. Now, there are two types of passenger endorsement licenses. And, you know, what's funny is that there's one that certifies you up to 10 people.
Right.
And the second one, which is, I think 15 passengers or less.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry. Wait, is that right?
There's one for 15 or less passengers, and there's one for more than 15. The number 9 comes in for, in California, you need a commercial driver's license to drive a limousine if it carries more than 9 people.
Got it. Okay.
And then, if you have one, if you start getting up to 15, that's when you need the passenger endorsement.
Ah, and that was what his confusion was. He said, I don't know what the difference is if you're carrying 15 people versus 10 people.
Right.
I don't know why, or rather 16 people versus 15 people. I don't know what the difference is, but apparently it's a big deal as far as licensing goes. And he said there's a funny catch 22 that goes on when you're getting a limo license that a lot of people wouldn't know about. And he says the catch 22 is this. You need the job to get the license, but you also need something to drive to get the license. And then you need a license to get the job. So.
Yeah.
It's like this back and forth. Like you got to have somebody that trusts you enough to drive their limousine to get the license to get the job before you get the job.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense. Now you may have to listen to that twice to understand that, but it's such a catch 22 that like you got to have pretty much have a friend that has a license or has a limo rather in order to go get your license, and it becomes this roundabout thing. Like, well, and, I'd love to do this, but I can't yet. I'm not licensed.
And Scott, legally speaking. You have to have a friend who not only will let you use the limo for the test, but will drive you in the limo to the DDS.
And even bigger conundrum, right?
Because, right. Yeah.
You know, this kind of reminds me a little bit of the motorcycle thing. You know, with the motorcycle licensing that goes on, you know, you almost have to have somebody drive the bike home from the dealership if you don't already have a license.
Right. Yep.
We talked about all
we
that.
We talked about that.
But also the European licensing is a little bit different. And then I'll wrap it up here. And that pretty much covers what Richard and I talked about. And I looked up the European stuff. And again, Richard, we really appreciate
that. Yeah, that was awesome. Thanks for writing.
Good insight that will play into the rest of the stuff as well. But European licensing. And you can stop me after this, Ben. I feel like I'm rambling at this point.
I'm interested.
Now, in Europe, if the vehicle is under 3,500 kilograms gross vehicle weight and can carry 8 passengers or fewer, you need something called a Category B driving license. Now, if the vehicle is under 7,500 kilograms gross vehicle weight, but it can carry 8 passengers or fewer, you need a C1 large goods vehicle license. And then if the vehicle is carrying 16 passengers or more, so here's that 16
number again,
which is strange. Then regardless of the gross vehicle weight, you have to carry a D1 license. So there's three different types of licenses in Europe that you require.
Yeah.
I guess it's three here. You need a CDL and then two different types of passenger endorsements.
Right. So, depending on how many passengers you want to carry. Now, for everybody who's listening, of course, you are right. If you're unfamiliar with the European licensing model, that gross vehicle weight refers to, the car before it is washed. So that's when it's still dirty. They've got vomit from an earlier prom on there. Hey, so before we jump in, I have to ask Scott, have you ever ridden in a limousine?
I have, just a couple of times, not really that many, like maybe my brother's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think I took one to prom, really. I think I just took my own car at prom. Let's see. I was in one when I was a young kid. My dad had one for the day. It was like something from work. I didn't even really understand the whole circumstance, but he picked us up at home. Like we went out and grabbed a quick lunch somewhere, and then he dropped us off like at the community pool there, you know, like the one that we belong to.
Yeah.
And of course I'm a little kid, so I'm like a celebrity for that day, you know, even though it was just like my dad had one for like 2 hours or something, you know,
Scott
left over from, you know, I don't know, maybe it's like picking up a client at the airport or something like that. I don't know what was going on.
That's
but it was,
cool.
It would have been the late '70s, maybe the early '80s. What about you, Ben?
Well, there's a little bit of a story, a little bit of a tangent, so I'll keep it brief, but stop me if I go too far. The first time that I remember riding in a limousine, I know that I've ridden in them when I was younger, you know, with my parents doing stuff, but I don't recall it very well. The first time I remember with clarity in my adult life was the very first real concert I ever went to, which was so weird. You can laugh if you want. I don't remember if I told you this story.
Was it Barry Manilow?
No, it was Aerosmith.
Ah, really? Okay, that's a little better.
And our friends, my friend's parents had, for some reason, gotten him and all of his friends, of which I was one, tickets for this Aerosmith concert and a limo ride. And I didn't know what was going on. You know, it was so nice and so out of the blue. Like it wasn't his birthday or anything that I immediately in my already paranoid mind thought, hey man, your parents are up to something. I don't know what it is, but don't be fooled by this whole Steven Tyler thing. There's something brewing. But I was, you know, I was fascinated, and my nerd part came out. So while everybody else is hanging out and, you know, doing the thing where you stand up in the sunroof and stuff like that.
Sure.
I was playing with the gadgets and checking, you know, checking different compartments.
Well, I tell you, that's a huge part of limousines, is all the fun stuff that's in the back that's not in a normal car, right? I mean, it's fun to play with that stuff.
No,
so that's interesting. I mean, it's got a, you know, a refrigerator.
Right.
And, you know, whatever else is back there. I mean, all the custom lighting, like you mentioned, and the sink that works and you know, all that crazy stuff.
Sometimes even compartments for changes of clothes, entertainment centers are really big now. Mm-hmm. But, the reason that we bring this up is that Scott, neither of us own limousines.
No.
And that's a very different thing, because historically limousines have been The idea of what we could call a limousine predates cars, because we know that since the early 18th century, at the minimum, there's been this idea of a chauffeured vehicle. The first actual limousine, arguably the first like powered limousine, comes around in the early 20th century, in like the early 1900s.
Sure.
And it is I don't have the model name, but if you check out the photos, this just chauffeured limousine thing actually has the driver exposed to the elements, and there's a covered compartment in the back for the passengers.
Now, I love looking at these types of limousines.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
I do, and they show up at, you know, the Concours events sometimes. You know, you find these older vehicles that are the chauffeur-driven vehicles that completely open to the elements for the chauffeur. And then everybody else is in a separate cabin behind that. Or, you know, there's modest covering, you know, there's maybe just the roof and no doors.
Just maybe even a soft top.
Mm-hmm.
The word limousine, comes, to us from France. Let's see if I can butcher this one. Limoges. I don't know. Limoges?
I don't know. Close enough.
I don't know.
That's all right.
There's a French person.
And it wasn't until about 1916 when the Society of Automotive Engineers started to define limousines. And there's really three types of limousines, really. And there's the first type that you mentioned. They just defined a basic limousine, I guess. It's a closed car seating 3 to 5 inside with the driver's seat outside.
Right.
So that's a standard limousine according to SAE standards. And again, this is 1916. A Berline, which is a different type of limousine. It's a limousine having the driver seat entirely enclosed. So that's a Berline.
Right.
And then there's a Brougham, which, you know, we've heard Brougham, I guess, associated with Cadillac a lot. And Cadillac comes up a little bit later, because Cadillac limousines are prevalent later in history. But a Brougham was defined as a limousine with no roof over the driver's seat. So that's the completely open type that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The one where, you know, all the elements were, I mean, if it was a bad day, I mean, I guess the driver is out in the rain and had no roof to even put up. I mean, it's out in the wide open.
Well, it was a different time. If they could afford a driver, then the passengers could probably also afford a driving outfit for him.
I guess so. You know,
he's got his goggles on.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. It seems like I've seen those types of things in like Bond movies or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyways, the thing I want to get at here is that, you know, when we talk about people who own limousines versus people who rent limousines. And now we see a lot of people renting limousines. And I want to talk about that too, just briefly. But, there's a big, big difference between someone who rents one and someone who owns one, because you got to think that the person who owns one, you know, they've special ordered that vehicle, or they've purchased it, you know, aftermarket, whatever. But they have to have a chauffeur on call at all times.
Right.
If you own one, maybe, you know, it's tough to get a chauffeur, you know, for the evening, I guess, you know, and what are you going to do with that vehicle? Otherwise, you're going to park it somewhere and just let it sit. There's all the maintenance that goes involved with the limousine, which is additional maintenance because of that stretched wheelbase. You have to make sure that, you know, the frame's not bending and you know,
there's no stress on the chassis.
There's additional maintenance that goes along with it as well. It's almost like it's like you'd have to clean it too. I mean, it's like cleaning a hotel room or something when you're done with it, right?
Right.
I mean, if there's somebody come in to clean it, I suppose, if you're not going to do that yourself. It's definitely not something you'd want to use for personal transportation. You know, you wouldn't want to just hop in the limousine and drive it to work every day, because it's
speak for yourself.
Well, maybe.
I'm kidding.
Some people, I'm sure that somebody has done this. You know, they own a limousine of some kind and they drive it to and from
it's
work
their
every
daily
day.
Daily driver.
It could be. But what's the fun in that? Because the point of a limousine is that it's a chauffeur driven vehicle. It's something that you sit in the back and you enjoy the luxury aspect of the stretched vehicle.
Oh, and I'm sorry, I forgot to continue our thread here. Limoges, going back to the etymology, is a feminine adjective of, I believe it's a, well, it's a feminine version at the very least of a region in France called Limousin. So L-I-M-O-U-S-I-N. And there are a couple of ideas about why limousines got this name. And one of the ideas is that the covered compartment looked like the raised hood of the cloaks that shepherds in the Limousin region would wear. And then the other idea is that the chauffeur driving the open air ones, what were those, the broghams?
The broghams, yeah.
The broghams, excuse me, that they were wearing cloaks that were popular in the Limousin region of France.
As they would have to if they're out in the open, if they're out in the elements all the time.
Right, right. And I got so absorbed in all these things I want to talk about with limousines, I totally forgot the etymology. But that is a good point. We know, however, that there's another type of limousine that comes along. And I think for most Americans, actually maybe for most people in the modern day, the stretch limousine is like the real limousine. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. The ones that are extended even beyond what you would think of just a, now, you know, there are limousines and there's stretch limousines. And I tried my best to find the difference between the two. Do you have a concrete difference between a limousine and a stretch limousine? Because it seemed like to me what it came down to was this is just an extended version of what a limousine would be.
Right. Yeah. That's, and you know what? I think that's astute. If we had to say a hard definition or hard differentiation, it seems like a lot of the earlier traditional limousines were built that way from the beginning, whereas some of the stretch limousines were modified.
So you're taking a standard vehicle, a luxury sedan.
Sure. Like a town car or something.
Yeah. Luxury vehicle. And you're stretching that to make it a limousine. And then you take a limousine and you stretch that even farther to make a stretch limousine. Is that right?
I'm thinking that, but you know, there's a Venn diagram there because I'm also not sure. I was wondering if it is maybe defined by the amount of people that it can carry.
Which might be
there, but it is a bit redundant to call it a stretch limousine. In my head, just the language doesn't make sense. It's like saying ATM machine.
I need to get back to Richard about this.
Yeah, we're going to dig in. Richard, you're probably listening. Help us out with that one.
Now, you know, of course, limousines are associated with wealth and prestige and power. And people who own limousines, like, you know, we just mentioned, are typically wealthy individuals, of course. You know, the ones that actually own them, not just rent them.
Right.
You know, they could be governments. You know, the people that are, you know, transporting politicians back and forth
sure,
from wherever
heads
they
of
go.
State.
Exactly. Yeah. So large companies also own them, you know, to transport executives back and
sure.
forth from the airport.
Yep.
Also, there's also like, you know, broadcast companies, I guess this is big, you know, like if someone comes in to film something, or to tape something rather, you know, let's say they're going into the main studios in New York and they fly into LaGuardia, they're going to go pick them up at the airport in the limo and take them back as well, or to the airport or to their hotel rather. They're going to transport them around town in that limousine. So, you know, broadcast companies are big with this for talent.
Yeah. Religious organizations as well.
Also, you know, one thing that, you know, we can't forget is funeral homes also own a lot of these things. And, they have a different type of limousine. They often seat a lot more people. They have the bench type seating that's set up a little differently. It's not like so much obviously, it's not a party vehicle, you know, where you're going to have, you know, the bars inside and you're going to have the custom lighting and all that. This is more, you know, basic transportation in comfort and style between the funeral home and the graveyard.
Yeah, it's more utilitarian.
Yeah, definitely utilitarian. And, you know, just there's a lot of different – there's used to be airport limos that I remember that were the like super stretched. You know, they would have, you know, like four or five bench seats in a row, you know, and four or five doors behind the driver's door. And, you know, they have a roof rack on the top that, you know, extended the whole length and lots of space in the back. It was like almost like a big station wagon, I guess. It was even a stretched station wagon, really. And there was a specific model, and I forgot to look up the model number or name. It seems like we've talked about it on Car Stuff in the past. And I know I've had a blog post somewhere along the way about it, you know, an old blog post. Some of these crazy airport limousines that were really, really long. Many, many doors on them. I want to say Oldsmobile made them, but I could be wrong.
Oh, Man, now it's on the tip of my tongue.
That's okay. No problem.
Well, if you want to see that blog post, you can go to carstuffshow.com and check it out. And I think you made a really good point when you're noting that the primary owners of limousines are going to be institutions or organizations rather than individuals, even for, you know, even for families that are quite well off and mm-hmm. aristocratic people who, you know, maybe have inherited a lot of money. It still makes more sense for them, most times to just maybe have a dedicated driver, but have a limousine service that they pay for so that they don't have to pay for the maintenance of these vehicles.
That's a good point, Ben. And, you know, the renting a limousine, there's nothing wrong with renting a limousine by any means. In fact, most limousines are owned and operated as what they call livery vehicles, which,
right.
You know, vehicles that are for rent or for sale, by the hour or by the day or the half day or however you want to break that down, maybe even the week or whatever. But, you know, there's a lot of good reasons to rent a limousine. And, you know, some of them are typical, you know, that you would think of like weddings and birthdays and
sure.
bachelorette parties and things like that, or bachelor parties. Prom is another big one.
Yep. Maybe Valentine's Day, honeymoon stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. Big public events, you know, celebrities always need to rent a limousine. Nobody wants to show up in their Subaru Outback
sure,
to the red carpet.
It's for showing off, really.
That is true.
In a lot of cases, to rent a limousine, you know, sometimes it's got a purpose where, you know, you want to go out for the evening, you want to have a good time, have a few drinks while you're out at dinner, have
yeah.
a few drinks while you're at some event maybe, or, you know, just have a good time and relax, not worry about the driving, be able to enjoy, you know, each other's company instead of, you know, worrying about driving and parking and, you know, paying the valet and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just easier in a lot of cases. I understand that. But I think a lot of times a limousine is rented to show off. And, you know, think about situations where, like, you're going to a high school reunion.
Right.
Like
there you go.
People love to do stuff like that, or they like to show up, you know, at a big party or something in a
yeah.
limousine versus driving their own vehicle. And it makes a statement, but I think a lot of people now know that, well, okay, they had enough money to pay for, you know, 3 hours of
yeah.
limo rental, which, big deal, I guess, because we said
yeah.
they're so, prolific now in our society. I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah, and they are still one of the most expensive forms of auto transportation, mm-hmm. but now they're not near as exclusive. So here's what I'm thinking for a high school reunion. Help me out with this. We get one of those really long limos that has a helipad, okay? And so we pull up just a little bit away from, you know, wherever the event is, right? Mm-hmm. The limo driver pulls up, and we land in a helicopter on the limousine. We get out of the helicopter, we sit in the limo, and then it drives, you know, like the next 20 feet up to the place, and then we get out. Is that too much? I wanted to be tasteful. So, one surprising thing that might catch a few of our readers off guard is that you can get a bargain basement limousine for 30 grand.
You could buy your own.
Buy your own.
No kidding. With the, I wonder what we'd get for something like that. I mean, I wonder if it would be kind of a stripped out model or if it would have everything, you know, all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, I don't think that is a bargain basement.
No, this one
is not all the bells and whistles.
I would bet for 30 grand for a limousine, you're probably getting something that has been, really put through its paces. You know, lots of miles, a lot of rough treatment in the back there.
It probably smells like cigarettes inside.
Yeah, and other things. I mean, you never know. So
you never
know
in a limo.
It may be rough, you know.
But on the other end, it can go up to, you know, $300,000 for something that's customized with a well, here's the thing, Scott. A lot of the limos that you'll read about, the one-of-a-kind marquee-type limos, have amenities that are kind of impractical, and they're more there because the idea is cool, like
sure.
a luxury car with a waterfall in it or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the opposite of the kind of stuff that I would want in a limo. But that's part of why the price can be so extravagant, because a lot of times these will be in their own way unique.
Okay. Now, I know there's a bunch of different types of limousines.
Right.
There's something like 5 different types of limousines or classifications of limousines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if classifications is the right way, because, you know, we've talked about the weight and the passenger numbers and all that, but
sure.
if you wanted to talk about the different types of limousines, you know, the standard types. There's traditional limousines. And, you know, those are large cars, extended. They're pretty big. They typically seat something like, you know, 8 people total.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 7 people plus the driver. So 7 or 8 people, that's a pretty big car still.
Sure.
But that's a traditional limousine. Then there's modern limousines, which are, you know, these are just a little bit different in that, you know, they differentiate themselves by, being a little bit longer. These are like the stretch limousines.
Right.
They've got different seating configurations than the traditional limousines.
And that's very important.
Yeah, because, you know, the older ones didn't have the seats that were sideways. If you picture it, like your back would be to the lane next to you.
Right.
Traditional limousines only had the rear bench seat. And then maybe a jump seat behind the driver's seat or two, maybe.
And a jump seat behind the driver's seat means a seat that sort of folds down like a Murphy bed.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, like an additional seat or two that would fold down, and that was it. And that's the kind I remember when I was a kid, that the old school type of limousine,
and,
the traditional.
You know, the black cabs, the Aston Martin cabs in the UK still have those.
Oh, really?
Those fold down seats.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So there's a lot of room for, and a lot of room for luggage and things like that.
Right.
There, right. If those are folded up. So, extra space in that way.
But so, anyways, modern limousine, the difference would be that the seats are positioned with the backs against the walls of the interior, mm-hmm. and all sort of facing in toward a center point.
Yeah. Good point. And, let's see. Then there's also the stage limousines. Now these are, boy, this is kind of strange. Examples of these were constructed from sedans, like maybe like Chrysler New Yorker or the Cadillac DeVille or the Checker Aero bus. You know, some of these big station wagon type vehicles. They call them stage vehicles. Now, that's the kind I was talking about, where the airport limo with the roof rack on the back,
right.
And, you know, 5 doors that go back from the driver's door. So big things, and also. Some of these stage vehicles are the funeral applications we talked about, you know, where they have, you know, like 6 doors instead of, you know, the 2 doors or 4 doors, rather.
Yeah.
So, you know, different set of needs that are satisfied by these stage vehicles. And then there's also exotic limousines. Now, these are the ones that have, like a hot tub in them. They will have, you know, the ones with the helipad, like we mentioned.
Uh-huh.
You know, the maybe a king size bed in the back, something like that.
Yeah, maybe it's essentially a rolling apartment, as we'll find, because I have some weird limos to talk about.
Well, you're probably thinking of the weird ones. You're probably thinking of like the last class, which is the novelty limousines. And the novelty ones are a good example would be like something made out of a Volkswagen Beetle. Or
right.
Something that, you know, like the one that we put on our Facebook page, which was the Mazda Miata.
Yeah.
The Mazda Miata limousine.
Check that out if you haven't seen it.
That was pretty crazy. And, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, there may be like leopard print outside or inside. They may have like chrome wrap paint on them or something
right.
like that.
Right. Or they may be, a vehicle that's not really car at all. Like they're tractor trailer limousine mods.
Exactly. And, you know, I need to make one quick point before you get into your last thing maybe. We're going to talk about production limousines, because there's a couple of different types. There's aftermarket, you know, where an independent coach builder takes a sedan or a luxury vehicle, and they chop it and they stretch it and they do what they do with it. But there's also a manufacturer built limousine. And these manufacturer built limousines haven't been around for a while. I think the last one was, officially the last manufacturer built limousine was in 1987 by the Cadillac Corporation.
Right.
And Cadillac Motors. And, That's kind of surprising to me, because I would think that Cadillac has been making limousines since then, but I just see so many aftermarket versions of Cadillac limousines.
Right. And the U.S. Cadillac and Lincoln are the top.
Exactly. And, you know, I keep thinking of like these exotic limousines, you know, where people take them and stretch them and do all kinds of crazy things with them. But the production ones, and I think we also need to make this point, Ben.
Yeah.
Make this point is that, you know, when I say production limousines, they're not making them on the production line. They would pull a Cadillac off of the production line into a separate area, and that's where they would go at it with the saw, and they would stretch it and, you know, weld it and do whatever they have to do. Just much like what we talked about with the hearses. You know, they don't build hearses on an assembly line for Cadillac. They would pull them off the line and create a Cadillac hearse out of them.
Good point.
And, you know, these other manufacturers would do the same thing. Now, the last Lincoln limousine, you'll be surprised to know, the one that actually Lincoln built, you know, aside from, you know, having someone else do it, was in 1939, but Lincoln has offered a couple of special order limousines along the way. So you could get one done, but, you know, for them to say, we're going to build, 12 limousines this year on the Lincoln line, they haven't done that since like 1939.
Right.
And Packard, I think, did this all the way up until 1954. And then I mentioned the Cadillac company, which did this until 1987. So that's not too long ago, but still, Ben, that's, we're nearing 30 years.
Yeah.
At that point. So,
and, we'll, you know, it's tough to assume that anything in the car world is permanently gone, because there's always going to be a possibility of a resurgence. And as we're about to find out, the world of limos is full of people who say, who seem to say, how can I one up the reigning craziest limo? Mm-hmm. I've got a little list here that I wanted to run past you, just briefly and see what you think about this.
Does it include the world's longest limo?
You know, the world's longest limo, surprisingly, is a contentious record.
It is. I have what I believe to be the world's longest limo, so I can include that if you'd like.
Yeah. And I want to hear what you think about these.
Okay.
There's one called The Beast, which, looks like just a normal, you know, not quite remarkable limo.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Here's what it's got. It's got military grade armor, so it's 5 inches thick.
Mm-hmm.
It has the run flat tires. The doors weigh as much as the cabin doors on a 757. It's sealed against biochemical attacks. It has a leak proof fuel tank, as a firefighting system. It costs $300. It gets about 8 miles to the gallon.
What costs
$300,000.
$300,000. Okay.
There we go.
That's a much more limo friendly number.
Yeah, you were about to check your wallet.
Yeah,
huh?
What's, now this all sounds very familiar, Ben. Would I know this limo?
I think you might. Would you like to take a guess? Maybe use the lifeline?
I think I already know, but go ahead and tell me.
This is the presidential limousine.
Yeah, the biochemical thing is what got me. I think I recognize it. One, I've also heard it called the Beast before.
Right, and then there's the rumor that it has the president's blood, like a pint of compatible blood in case he gets shot.
Mm.
But yeah, we did a podcast on the presidential limo, so our longtime listeners probably are starting to be familiar with
this.
Probably
mentioned it in armored cars as well. I mean, I think we'd have to.
Yeah, we'd have to, because, it really is a beast. Another one that I thought was interesting is one modeled after the Batmobile.
Oh, cool.
The Michael Keaton Batmobile,
Is that the one they call the Dark Chauffeur?
I haven't heard that
name. I think, and I said it that way on purpose. It's a chauffeur, right?
But yeah. So this is based on a Corvette design, and I don't know. If you're a Batman fan, check it out. But
I guess it's close to the original Batmobile, or the Batmobile rather, but not the original, but,
the 1990s Batman.
Similar, not exact.
Yeah, similar, not exact. I think you'd have to really like Batman, but, the one that currently, at least according to my sources, holds the record for the world's heaviest limousine is something called the Midnight Rider. And Scott, this is what I was talking about with novelty. You see this? It's adapted from a tractor trailer. Have you seen this before?
Very cool. I have seen this one. I've seen a very short documentary on this thing. You know, just a little snippet somewhere here and there. It's like a 10-minute thing.
Yeah, it's an apartment inside, man. It's got a full bar, bathroom. It seats 40 people. It has 3 lounges.
Yeah, it weighs 50,560 pounds.
Yep.
Huge. It's 70 feet long.
Yeah, it has a crew on it, just like you would have on any other ship. This one just happens to be on tires. So you've got 2 bartenders, a hostess, an operations engineer.
Oh my gosh. You know, that's a good comparison, Ben, to compare it to, like, if you had a luxury yacht.
Yeah,
it is. Because you'd have to staff the thing as well. So, you know, aside from all the maintenance and upkeep and, you know, just keeping the thing clean and running.
Yep.
You'd have to have somebody that can, you know, work all of the systems involved in this thing. I mean, you'd have to have 2 bartenders. that's incredible. You know, just think about what that costs to pay just the staff to run this thing.
Right. And there's a phone system on board this thing. So can you imagine, you know, I hope they have their own lingo. You know, they're out of gin or whatever. And bartender A says, you know, like, Red Eagle. This is the nest.
Yeah, I hope they have something like that.
But
good mental picture, anyway.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm sure that if you can afford that, the Midnight Rider, they'll pretend to do that if you want. 70 feet in length, Scott, still not the longest, which we're building up to.
Yeah, that's right.
If you like Ferraris, you can have a Ferrari limousine. I think that defeats the purpose of a Ferrari. personally.
They've seemed a little silly to me.
Yeah, but you saw this one too.
I have, yeah. It looks like it has roll bars all the way through the one huge door that opens in the middle. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
You
yeah.
can still
and,
go.
And
yeah.
Also, you know, they do this with Corvettes. They do this with other
right.
sports cars as well. And
sure.
It just always looks a little silly to me.
I think it's a cool novelty.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were.
I wouldn't pass up a ride in one. Don't get
no,
me wrong.
Yeah,
but,
well, no.
But if you could choose between that or a traditional limo to ride in, I think I'd still go with the traditional. I mean, if you want to ride a Ferrari, you rent a Ferrari for the two hours or whatever.
It is kind of cool though that it has just two gigantic gullwing doors.
That is pretty cool. But you know what? The thing is, like, if you this is kind of hard to put into words here, but
okay.
If you're renting a Ferrari for something like this, I mean, I understand the statement that it makes, you know, you arrive in a Ferrari limousine. That's kind of unusual. People would stare at it, right?
Right, yeah.
But,
who's this Scott Benjamin guy at the world premiere?
But, you know, a limo is something that you ride in for luxury and comfort.
Yeah.
That's not that. And also, I think when you're arriving in a Ferrari, wouldn't you rather be driving a Ferrari?
You know, that's the thing. It does feel a little bit,
I mean, maybe the chauffeur is the one having all the fun.
Huh, that's
all.
True.
That's my point.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, maybe it's not for us, but I'm sure that there are people who have a wonderful time with it. One thing I will say, though, is if you think about it thematically, what a limousine has become, because it's such a big business now, it's about making an outlandish statement,
yeah,
right?
Big business. I'll say it's a $4 billion industry.
There we go.
Just here in the U.S. In the U.S. alone, it's a $4 billion limousine. There's something like, oh my gosh, there's more than 4,000 limousine companies in the United States operating right now, and they employ about 42,000 employees right now in
wow.
the United States. And I think those are 2012 numbers, so that's even a couple of years behind. I don't know if they're growing or if it's declining, but that's a huge number, a $4 billion industry.
Oh, you know who else probably owns some limousines?
Who's that?
Drug cartels and Middle Eastern families.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And I imagine, I'm trying to think of billionaires that might do it. I wonder if Bill Gates owns a limo or if he just takes cabs. He has to own some sort of
thing.
Well,
I would think that the corporation itself would own limousines.
That's probably what
it is. That's probably what it is. I don't know if he owns them particularly in, you know, specifically in his own home or whatever, you know, if he has them on call
yeah.
or if they just kind of come over from the headquarters. Who knows? I don't know how all this works.
Let me pitch you on something.
Yeah,
I want to see what you think. We'll play a little bit of a Price is Right kind of thing.
Okay.
So, Scott, what if I told you that you could be the owner of a street legal limo that was converted from a Boeing 727? It's the external. It's like the body of the 727 covering a Mercedes 50-seater.
So it's like the fuselage with no wings.
Yep.
Hmm.
Here, I'll show you a picture for your reference.
Oh, that is bizarre.
How much would you pay for this?
How much? To rent or to buy?
To buy.
To buy.
It's
50, I wouldn't go a dime over $10,000, Ben.
It's sold on eBay for $274,100.
Oh, my gosh. That's a lot more than I thought.
Somebody likes just that part of a plane.
I mean, I know it's probably worth more than $10,000. I just didn't know what you were going to say. I don't know if you're going to say a $2 million number or a $200,000 number.
Right.
But that's a crazy. But you know what? There's a lot of space in there. I bet that.
Here's one of the sillier ones. It's the boat. It's modeled after a boat.
Very nice. A boat on land. Yeah, sure. Who wouldn't want that?
It's for sale at $35,000. I don't know if they've sold it yet. Mm-hmm. One note though, the boat does not float. It looks kind of like a pirate ship theme thing that you would see at an amusement park. It's not necessarily for me, Scott, but you know what is? Maybe the tank.
There's a tank limo?
Dude, yes, there's a tank limo.
I've not Look seen the tank one. Limo. Oh, very nice.
Yeah,
very
it's nice. Got two Vickers 432 APCs, right? Welded together, and it's tax exempt. It can be driven if you have a car license in the United Kingdom. It's got a 8-liter Rolls-Royce engine.
We have a lot of listeners in the UK. I wonder if anybody has seen this tank vehicle, this tank limousine on the streets.
It's got 8 seats, and it gets 4 miles per gallon. So
maybe
you know.
One of our listeners has been in the tank limousine.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right. So the last one, I just think this is a beautiful car, Scott. This is a Rolls-Royce concept limo.
Oh, that's really cool looking.
Right. If it ever got built.
Looks like a freight train.
It looks like its own freight train, and I think that's one of my favorites. But now we've built up to something that I think would be a good point to end our podcast on, maybe?
Sure, yeah.
What is the world's longest limousine?
The world's longest limousine is supposedly in Burbank, California, at least it was at the time of this writing, 100 feet long, Ben. So
Whoa.
It's longer. Now, take a look at the Midnight Rider, the
tractor trailer.
Tractor trailer, and it's an extended one. I mean, that's huge. That's 70 feet long. That's huge.
Right.
This is 30 feet longer than that. Now, it's gigantic. I mean, it has 26 wheels. It has two driver compartments because they need to negotiate the back end of this thing as well as the front end of this thing.
Kind of like a fire truck.
It's for when they're backing up mainly.
Wow.
So that they're able to negotiate everything. Yeah, it's like a fire truck in that way. It has a sun deck. It has a swimming pool, Ben, mm-hmm. with a diving board. Also has a helipad on it, I believe. Is that the one? Yeah, with a helipad.
Yeah, that's the one.
A satellite dish, at least one king-size bed, and possibly, I think it can bend in the middle. I'm not sure if it's rigid or if it can bend in the middle. I've kind of seen both things, you know, in different turning, rather. Yeah, I think so. I think it has to be able to bend in the middle, but, you know, a lot of different beds, 26 wheels, 100 feet long. I mean, it's excessive.
Yeah.
That's just somebody just trying to break the world record with this thing. That's what it was.
I think so, too. Just trying to get in the Guinness book.
Yeah. And then someone will come along and build a 101-foot limousine and then
right.
top that.
So it'll be like the race for the tallest building,
yeah.
which is almost entirely fought by antenna now.
Yeah, sure.
But also, you know, it's not street legal. We're not saying don't buy it, but we're saying be aware.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, I think there's so much that we've covered with this, and I know there's other angles to this whole story that we're not really hitting here, but, you know, I just wanted to point out that, you know, it's so strange, and I think I've said this along the way at least once, that, you know, we see limousines often today, and I think, you know, even 20, maybe 30 years ago, you just didn't see them that often. And when you did see them, it was really somebody important. It wasn't somebody out just having, you know, an evening out where they wanted to drink, you know, when they go to the bar and not drive home.
Right.
This was something like, this is a foreign dignitary, or it was a celebrity
sure.
that was coming in, you know, to do a film an interview.
Yeah.
Or it was a movie star. Or it was a head of industry of some kind.
A former president.
Exactly. Yeah. It was something like that. And now it's the case where, you know, one of my daughter's friends, she rented a limousine and took, you know, a bunch of 9-year-olds out to the nail salon and then back to the house for the party in it. You know, and that's crazy to me that, you know, that something would be used for something like that. But, you know, I mean, good for them. It was fun and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying, like, it's very, very accessible now. And there's so many of them out there. We just see them all the time. Has it lost some of its, exclusivity?
Yeah.
Is it something that's, you know, something that's been a little bit watered down? Because of, you know, there's just so many of them out there now.
And okay.
I wonder that. I mean, what do you think?
I think that there's a valid argument to be made there. However, we have to remember that not all limousines are created equally.
True.
So there can still be some exclusivity in the world of limos in terms of, you know, we have these kind of at times garish novelty limos, and we have the accessible livery limos that people can hire out for a time. But then again, there will always be some very high-end limos that are simply too expensive to rent.
Sure.
And I think that part of the dilution argument is valid, but it's not completely lowering the social cachet of a limousine.
I understand, but I see very few what I would call stately, classy
right.
limousines where, you know, it's and I'd say class, they're all pretty classy. I'm just saying the ones that are owned by an individual where there's a chauffeur up front with a cap on in the front, you know, and
yeah.
it's not really the super stretch or anything like that, but it does have the dark windows, and it may have just the one seat in the back, and it's really for getting, you know, someone to and from work every day.
Well, and I think that's here's something I will point out that puts me on the side of your argument. This is how common limousines are becoming now. You know, I do some comedy stuff on the side outside of work here, and one of the venues where I do stuff it's a small place. It's literally like the basement floor of this building. And there are like 3 limos parked out in the back where, you know, I usually leave after I've done my set or whatever. And I've asked around about who owns these limos. People don't know. Just three random limos hanging out. Yeah.
Maybe they're being paid for storage space or something.
Yeah, I imagine it's somebody. But that's how common you literally, that's how common they are. You literally can walk in and run into some limousines. But I don't think it removes entirely some of the class and dignity associated with that. And Scott, I guess we should ask our viewers what they think, or our listeners rather, what they think, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think? We hope you enjoyed our podcast on limousines. And again, we'd like to thank our buddy Richard R. for, giving us some insider info about these amazing vehicles. Tell us if you think that limousines are becoming a more common thing, any experiences you've had with limousines that you think the rest of our audience would want to hear.
Keep it clean.
Keep it clean. Keep it family friendly. We can be found on Facebook and Twitter. We have a great website, carstuffshow.com. If you search the blogs, you can see the posts that we were talking about limousines earlier. And you can always send us an email directly. Our address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.